Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight, returning after too long an absence, is artist and sculptor Kitty Wales. Kitty, welcome back to the show. After such a long absence, it's great to talk to you.
Good to be here. Nice to talk to you, Mark.
Lately, when I've been talking to artists, one of the first things I like to ask them is, how did you deal with COVID, and like, how did it change, or did it change your work?
Well, that is a good question, isn't it? Because everybody was doing their own thing during COVID. And isolated, as I was. We had just moved from Massachusetts to Belfast, Maine, and I was working in a new studio. We were, enjoying kind of setting things up, and I was being kind of productive in the studio because there wasn't much else to do. So I really switched gears a little bit from my work. You might, as you know, I'm mostly figurative artist, studying animals and their environment and doing installations, sculptural installations. So then I started changing up a little bit, still using recycled materials because it was hard to get materials during COVID. So I had a lot of chair parts left over from my last installation.
Okay, that explains a lot. Okay.
Yeah. So recycle. That's always been
right.
An important part of the process. So instead of doing animal forms, I just kind of started doing these abstract structures made out of recycled wood on the wall pieces. And then bringing in household objects that I cast and altered in some way, and then started creating these little narratives on the wall pieces. They were it was very new and very out of my comfort zone, but it was something really good to do during a time when I was so isolated and I felt like I had a lot of freedom to explore something different.
Is it safe to say then that your experience during COVID was actually, in the end, sort of positive because it made you sort of change up?
Yeah, I think so, for sure.
I want to talk about those new pieces because some of them are on your website, and I got a chance to see them for the first time. The first thing I thought of is it reminded me of the work of Kurt Schwitters, who did these wall assemblages. And he was sort of an odd Dadaist. Anyways, he'd be walking around with a suitcase collecting, again, thrown away materials. And he claimed that he would nail his paintings together. And but your pieces have sort of a biomorphic aspect of them. They still sort of look like animals in a vague sort of way. And then there's these sketches of the pieces. Can you talk to me about those? Do they come first and then you do the sculptures, or do the sculptures come first and then you do the sketches?
Well, you're talking about the drawings and prints.
It's both
happens. So I do a lot of drawing and sketches to try and get a sense of the shape that I'm looking for the structure, the initial structure.
Yep.
And then as the process is going, I make drawings to kind of figure out how these household objects, which act as kind of characters in little vignettes, because there's like little nooks and crannies that I stuff the household objects in, and they have some kind of relationship to each other. I don't know what it is, but I assume that people will come up with their own stories. And then what I really like to do is draw from the piece afterwards and just kind of clarify the color and positioning of things. So it's a very enjoyable part of the process. The sculpture is, labored, a lot of labor-intensive process. And then the drawing is just such a pleasure to kind of finally do something that's that kind of comes rather quickly.
The drawings are interesting. First of all, they're in color. And you have in the background, you have all sorts of weird little doodles, and there's even equations in the background. Am I right? Mm. I thought I saw equations.
Yeah,
in
absolutely.
The... That's part of your work I've never seen before. Where does all that come from?
Well, my father was a mathematician.
Ah.
And all throughout my life, he created these, he would make these, fill these notebooks with math and math problems and solutions and all that kind of thing. And I've always thought that's a very beautiful language.
Yep.
And when he passed, I started bringing that all into my work. I was never very good at math, but my father was very patient with me trying to do these equations. But I find, interestingly, a math brain and an art brain are very similar.
They're very abstract.
Yeah, there's an abstraction. There's a lot of, you know, playing around with experimenting and trying to find solutions to things.
Yeah.
So the math is just comes in. And the other thing that was going on I had gone before COVID restricted travel. I had spent some time in Mexico City at the Anthropology Museum. I got a little grant from my university. And I really fell for those Mayan and Aztec codices.
Yeah.
They're these, you know, hieroglyphic folded books that illustrate ancient Mesoamerican bloodlines. And, they're about science. They're about the stories of these people. And they're just really strange shapes and characters. And the storytelling is all pictorial. So that really was the impetus to get me going in my COVID isolation. So they all sort of come out of that.
Have you visited any of the archaeological sites?
Well, when I was a kid, I did.
Wow.
We went to Mexico and went to the various places, Tula and the Pyramid of the Sun and the moon and some of those places. So I've always been kind of fascinated by it.
I'm really interested in what you were talking about mathematics, because of all the groups of people that I interview in this show, I found mathematicians really wild. And more so than artists. It's like they're in another dimension. They're dealing with total abstraction. And I love those mathematicians that are just, they're not even trying for practical applications of their math. They're just dealing with abstractions. But one of the things they talk about to a person, they talk about that the equations, and this is true also for physics and chemistry, they always talk about that they have to be beautiful. That an equation has to sort of balance out and not be an awkward sort of thing with 95 figures in it. It's got to be a beautiful equation. E equals MC squared is a beautiful equation to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a sense of aesthetics. And I think you really hit the nail on the head. I think there's an interesting relationship between artistic values and mathematical values.
Mm.
But they never talk to each other.
Well, I did have a mathematician for dad, and we did have conversations. But they were on different, you know, different pursuits. But he was great to talk to.
And I think it's amazing that that work is starting to show up in your art. Did it ever show up in your art before this? I don't remember seeing it with your animal sculptures.
No, you're right. But it always does show up in some way in my prints.
It does.
And I have some kind of printmaking aspect to the installations. So they show up in more subtle ways, but now they're also on the sculpture, because one of the things about these new wall pieces is that they're layered with many, many layers of paper.
Yeah, yeah.
And, so they're really a great surface for drawing on. So the color is actually made with pencils, watercolor pencils. So, and a lot of math is incorporated into the surface of those pieces.
How big are they?
They're about 5 feet.
I bet looking at your website, that I didn't imagine. I thought that they were more like petite.
No, that's interesting. Well, think of them; they're chair parts.
I know. I thought you were looking. I thought you were working with doll chairs.
Wow! Oh no!
Oh my God! They're huge.
Well, it's really been fun, and I'm having a show coming up in August, beginning of August.
Yeah.
And I'm doing a site-specific installation in a barn, and the barn has a lot of geometry in the beams on one wall. So I'm creating a site-specific pieces that go within the geometry of that wall. So it's going to be pretty big, big piece.
You've done site-specific installations before, correct?
Yeah, I do like to do that.
You do. Look, to me, as a person who's never done a site-specific installation, it seems like it's like somebody asking a poet on the spot to make up a poem, which is really chancy. Do you enjoy that sense of that tension of having to come up with something?
Well, you know what I like about it is that it gives me a parameter to work within. So it's not like a total clean slate. I have to really work within the geometry of the space. And so that actually is very inspiring and often pushes the work forward.
Now, you've done artists in residency. Did those artists in residencies also involve site-specific works?
Yeah. So I did one in Germany in Kleinsaaten in a residency there, and they gave me a really way too big room to do a specific thing.
Most artists would not complain about that.
Oh, I was really hoping for a smaller room because I had two, maybe 3 weeks to create a piece.
Oh, whoa. Oh, okay. I thought you were there for the summer. That's the pressure's on. No, the pressure's on to fill the space. Yeah, okay.
Deadlines are good, actually. But so what it was, again, recycled work. And so the entire village of this tiny place called Kleinsaaten, I'll just interject by saying that Klein means small and Saaten means very small village.
So you're in a big space in a small village?
Yeah. But so what it was that the villagers were bringing in all these objects that they didn't want anymore, and just we filled up. There was just piles and piles of stuff, old chairs and skates and parts of vacuum cleaners. And
oh my heaters. God.
Yeah, and it just kept coming in, and then we had to create a. I was there with my husband; he helped me, which was great. And we were created a piece that was based on a small print by Durer of these hunting dogs.
Yeah,
St. Eustis. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, I do know. I do know it. Yeah.
And I was really interested in the dogs. You can imagine why. And I brought three styrofoam carved heads with me in a suitcase. And then I built.
Okay.
Can
I just stop you there? Can I stop you there for a second?
Sure.
Did you get stopped at the airport?
No, I did not. They were in check baggage, so no, I didn't get stopped with my...
That's a tough one to explain.
So then I created the rest of the dogs using whatever materials I could that was at hand, and then an installation filling the space with the sort of environment around those dogs that were in the print.
Wow. Now, you've done a lot with dogs.
Dogs have been sort of peppered throughout my work for a long time.
The first dog sculpture, and I'm trying to remember where I saw this. I think it was
Cordova, I think.
Thank you, right. Which still, that piece still is vivid in my mind. It was an entire pack of dogs running a machine that was essentially knitting them into existence.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. It was called Canis Ex Machina.
And people can go to your website and give out your website address.
KittyWales.com.
And that's spelled how?
It's all lowercase, KittyWales.
People have to see, I found that, and I'd been a longtime admirer of your work, but that sort of broke a barrier for me at looking at your work, because that was in another dimension. Normally, and pieces like your Lammergeier pieces or your goat pieces and shark pieces, where you go and you'd study the animal, and then you would do these beautiful things out of found metal, very realistic, and two size sculptures of them. Mm-hmm. But this sort of had a, like, it, I can't explain, it was animated. Even though it didn't move, it had movement sort of in there in the sculptures. And I thought that was a very different piece. And from there, your sculptures seemed to capture that. What was the one you did with the Texas Longhorn in the bedroom?
The dog piece with a lot of imaginative nano magic that would allow that to be animated, but and then the cow, the longhorn, I went to go study that in Texas, the longhorn cow.
Yeah.
And then I came back.
I never got to talk to you about that. Are they approachable? Like,
okay, I'll tell you a little story. I went to two ranches, these wonderful people allowed me to study them. And one was in Huntsville, Texas, and there was a wonderful rancher, and there was just a great herd of longhorn cows and heifers and bulls, but I like the heifers. And so the manager took me to on the tractor to a distant pasture where they were all hanging out, the whole herd. And he brought me a lawn chair, and I had my sketchbook and things like that. And so we went on the tractor quite a ways, and we found the herd, and he set me up in the middle of the herd with my lawn chair. And then off he went in the tractor, and there I was, so happy to be right in the middle of a herd and experiencing them on a first-hand basis, close and personal. And then one by one, they all decided to follow the tractor back to the barn.
Whoa.
So one by one, they all left me alone in the pasture. So that was a great experience, and I had to find my way back to the civilization from that pasture. But that sort of goes to show you that you can never expect perfect conditions for studying in the field. After that, I just hung out on the tractor with the farmer, and I just got the best, really great sightings from the feeding them and things like that. But they are interesting because they go out about 10 feet, those horns.
I know.
And they have beautiful shapes and whatnot, but they do seem aware of those tips where they are so far away from their head. It was amazing to watch them.
So they can actually use them as an offensive weapon fairly accurately?
Well, more that they're avoiding things.
Oh, so they use it like sensory things.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
You have so many adventures in your work.
Well, true.
I was surprised when I went to your website that you actually did try out some animatronics on rabbits.
Yeah, I did animatronics. That was another sort of winter project where I took apart toys, animated toys, you know, the kinds you would probably get at Christmas, and they would sing a ridiculous Christmas song, and they would be dancing in various ways. So I would grab these from various secondhand stores and whatnot and take them home and take them apart completely and just have their guts and then redesign them into other things. And then I created a lot of puppet sets for them and then would make it so that you could push a button and then this little scene would happen.
Wow.
Those were a lot of fun to do. They were just battery operated. And mostly I would cut the sound out. And so they just would do their own thing.
There's so much more I want to talk about. I want to make sure we get it in the half hour. You've been doing human figures, which has been new. There's a beautiful piece. I think it's called Migration. Is that it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's an amazing and powerful piece. You also did one about La Infanta. I think that's from an El Greco painting.
Velázquez,
excuse me. How do you feel about doing human figures after doing animals? Is it difficult? You have to put a lot more into it? Or talk to me about that process.
You know, it is difficult. It's very difficult, particularly the faces.
Yeah,
That part is very hard. It's a lot easier to do that, to do heads and things with animals. It's not, I mean, there's symmetry there for sure. We're just so much more invested in the human face. So it's harder to get it right. But the migration story, that was the start of the chairs, using chairs, and then I just got so many. Where I live in the summer is an island in Maine, everybody kept bringing me old chairs that they hadn't.
It's the woman who uses junk. Let's dump it off with her.
I know. Even in the dump, the guys were saving them for me.
Oh, wow.
No, it was great.
It sounds great. It sounds fantastic.
They're really pretty chairs that, you know, they really have great shapes in them, because they're old, they come from a long time ago, these chairs, so they have a history to them, which I found sort of fascinating. And because she was made out of chairs and she had a train that went all the way up and out the window made out of chairs, it was kind of the concept of, because I was, so much was going on about migration then, so with what you leave behind, what you can't let go of, those kinds of things.
Yeah. And it was also an interesting aspect. Normally your sculptures have clean silhouettes.
Right.
But that piece sort of, as you mentioned, it wandered out the window and just kept breaking up into chair bits. And so it sort of extended the piece into infinity.
Mm.
And you did a dog like that. Or dogs like that, where the chairs came out of the dogs.
Well, that's true, Mark. You know, I did the lady by herself, and I decided that she needed some companions.
Yeah.
So then I made the dogs in a similar way, and they also were sort of trailing chairs as well.
But it's a different look for your sculpture.
Yeah, you're right. It's true.
It's not clearly confined. It starts to go out into the space that we're in as the viewer. And I find that really interesting. I had a whole different feel for your work. It wasn't contained.
Yeah. I think it's more connected to the environment, that the settings that it's in. That just kind of evolved. But thanks for noticing that. It was a good talk.
We're quickly running out of time, but you also did a residency in Baku, Azerbaijan.
Yes, I did.
That's like on the lower end of lists of places I would think about doing a residency, because you never hear about, you know, resident artists in Azerbaijan. How did you?
No, that was really amazing, and I have to tell you, I was pretty nervous about that big long trip there, but it turned out to be one of the greatest experiences I've had in in a residency. Azerbaijan, they are really working on recycling because of the mess that was left behind by their previous the Russians, and so they brought in artists from around the world to come and create sculptures from their waste management company that they're really trying to promote recycling. So we went to their waste management and their solid waste, and we had all these trucks, and we just threw things into the trucks and then brought them back and created a sculpture. And again, it was a deadline of I think it was 3 weeks. And then we had a big exhibition of them, and they created a museum for that. They've done that now, I think they've done it 5 years or so, or 6 years, and I was in the third year. I think that is what started all the, you know, working with chairs and other things, because I learned a lot from what other artists were how they constructed their recycled materials.
Kitty, we're out of time now. Where is your exhibition in August?
It's going to be in Vinyl Haven, Maine, which is an island off the coast of Rockland. There's a ferry that comes there.
Wow.
It's August 6th. Through the 30th, and it's at the New Era Gallery, which is right on Main Street. And if anyone wants to come, they can contact me through my website. I'll pick them up at the ferry.
Wow. My guest tonight, returning after too long an absence, has been artist and sculptor Kitty Wales. I would go see, if you've never seen her work before in person, it's one thing to see it on the website, but you need to see it in person. This is a good opportunity to do it. Kitty, it's been a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, Mark. It's great to talk to you.
It's great to talk to you. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.